This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where the end of the regular Football League season is upon us. And over the past week, three more managers have been celebrating promotion. And we're going to talk to one of them. His team have just won Sky Bet League One for a record-breaking fourth time.
You know, coming together collectively and as strong as you can do, and you know, sometimes you get that little bit of luck and come together, which fortunately we did.
And talking of record breakers, we'll celebrate the achievements of the Sky Bet Championship's greatest goal scorer of the modern era, with the man he's just replaced in the history books.
I think the way he's played, not just his goal scoring, but the assist and, you know, his movement, not just for himself, but for others as well. There was often he would take himself away from somewhere that he knew was going to be a danger area where another player could go. And that reminded me of what Paul Walsh used to do for me in that side that year.
It's the official EFL podcast. Yes, we'll appraise Alexander Mitrovic's record-breaking 43-goal haul for the season for Sky Bet Championship title winners Fulham, with the man whose record he broke, the former Portsmouth striker Corporal Punishment himself, Guy Whittingham, a little bit later on this week's episode of the official EFL podcast. But first, the regular season in Sky Bet League One concluded last weekend. Everything's been brought forward 1 week in the division as a result of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. AFC Wimbledon, Doncaster Rovers and Gillingham will join Crewe Alexandra in playing in Sky Bet League Two next season. Wycombe Wanderers, Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday and MK Dons will contest this season's League One playoffs. And it's congratulations to the two teams who secured the automatic promotion places, runners-up Rotherham United and champions Wigan Athletic. And we can talk to their manager, Liam Richardson. And actually, Liam, I'm obviously going to concentrate heavily on you, but just if you don't mind, a word on Rotherham and what Paul Warne's achieved, bouncing back from relegation three times. I mean, that's an extraordinary achievement, isn't it, from one of your rivals to push you all the way?
Outstanding. I know Paul quite well, Richie Barker and Matty Amshaw down there as well. So I know how hard they work. And like you say, from the relegation, in the last breath of last year as well, to maintain large parts of the championship squad, they've still got to, go to work and certainly hit the ground running again and to get them promoted. I think they've had an outstanding season. With all the challenges that most football clubs face, obviously going to Wembley as well is an added bonus for them. And speaking to Paul, we actually exchanged voicemails and texts on the Sunday morning, so he was as gratified and as certainly proud as I was. I think we kept each other honest all year as well. Certainly from the outside.
I mean, that's wonderful to hear, because sometimes these rivalries can spill over and the tension of people being under pressure can get into the bones. But it's always been a kind of respectful rivalry right the way through, which is hard to do if you know a lot of people within the camp, is it not?
Yeah, of course it is. I think Paul was the first manager to try and shuffle his pressure onto Wigan last year, playing them the first game of the season. I think he was calling us the Harlem Globetrotters while we still had five academy graduates within the squad. So it's all done in good form and in good cheek. And, I think he knew the challenge, ahead of him as well. But thankfully, we didn't disappoint him and, we kept him healthy and challenged him all the way to the last game of the season.
Now, here was me, you see, trying to just paint the picture of the lovely relationship between the two, and you get the final word. And now, the person I should be speaking to today is not Liam Richardson, but George Richardson, isn't it? Because by all accounts, he reminded you as you went for your medal on Saturday that he'd predicted this 2 years ago.
He did. And absolutely quite surreal, to be honest. I said in the interview, and don't flippantly say it, it's obviously the administration brought all sorts of challenges and fundamental problems with it, and very innocently, as your children do, they bring you crashing right back down to earth quite quickly. So when I went home after, obviously, knowing all the ramifications of the administration, he quickly turned around and he actually, he was asking questions, what does it mean? How does it leave myself, Wigan, the fans, the people who have lost their jobs? And after trying to explain it to a 9-year-old at the time, going on 10, he looked at me quite inquisitively and quite expressionless, as though to say, well, I don't know what the problem is. Because every time you go into League One, you'll just go there, you'll pick the trophy up, and then we go back into the Championship, which, you know, at the time, again, bless him, it's so innocent, but yet so surreal. And then as we were walking out behind Rick Parry and obviously the chairman, Talal, and the chief exec on Saturday, he kind of looked up to me and he said, you know, I told you so, we'll go and get the trophy now. And, bless him, it brings a tear to your eye, but very innocent and, he does think it happens every other year, to be honest.
Yeah, but do you know what? You outlined something which is, I suppose, an extra pressure on managers these days, which is, of course, we forget that new generations sweep in, you know, and people who only started watching, say, a decade ago have very different perceptions of Wigan to the people that were there when the club was elected into the league in 1978. So it is relevant. The times change, don't they? And different generations have different expectations, I suppose, Liam.
Of course they do, yeah. I mean, that goes with the industry and hand in hand, doesn't it? It goes with the social media. It goes with the modern day football itself, and you've got to move with the times, just like the coaching and managing styles. The expectation and criteria sometimes at different football clubs, and it can run away from you. And I think you've always got to remind yourself what's actually true to form within your own football club. You know, what substance is there? You know, how you represent the town, the history, and you've got to try and filter that into the staff and the players. Because, you know, it's important that the fans are also on board, because collectively, as you've seen from last year, when we had all our challenges off the pitch and on the pitch, you know, coming together collectively and as strong as as you can do, and all, you know, setting the criteria and expectation, you know, trying to align it, you know, sometimes you get that little bit of luck and come together, which fortunately we did.
Yeah, I have to say, by the way, that was just a lovely image that families got involved on the whistle and stuff, which is really important because they've obviously spent many an hour without you there at home. And I dare say the odd one or two, not that you've had too many sticky moments this season, but the odd one or two where Mr. Grouch has come home as well. Here's some quick fire questions for you. Instant emotion on the final whistle. What did you feel?
Proud. I felt it wouldn't bring total stability or total any memory back, but I thought it brought a little bit of closure to the administration, you know, for the, you know, people who got made redundant. You know, it gave them that little bit of you know, kind of humility and gratitude towards all the past. So more than likely, you know, more for them as well, but then proud for the football club to bounce back and you know, certainly to be as strong as it has become again from where we were.
First person away from the ground itself who wasn't at the game who you spoke to?
Paul Cook, actually.
Okay.
He rang me, obviously congratulating the staff, the players, and everybody involved. He's obviously watched from afar. And he was, you know, he's very, very obviously made up with the result, and obviously Wigan going back into the Championship.
Amazing. There's two more of these. Let's see where we go. First thing you did when you got back home and shut your front door?
Well, the dog jumped over.
Oh, I was going to say, if you can tell me, obviously, this is a family podcast.
Yeah, no, I still had the kids with me at the time, so I was all right. The dog jumped all over me, so it was nice to have a cup of tea and sit down and take that sigh of relief in the kitchen with just my wife and the kids, because like you say, they sacrifice so much. We spend so much time away from them, and you know, and like you said there, you alluded to, sometimes they don't get the best version of myself after a negative result, but they're always there to quickly, you know, get me going again and bring me spirit. So they deserve it just as much as I do.
And finally, when your eyes popped open on Sunday morning, what was the first thing that you thought? Again, if you can share that with us.
Yeah. that I don't have to pick a team again for Tuesday, because we've been playing Saturday, Tuesday since December. So that was a nice feeling that I didn't have to disappoint any of the lads not playing, because I trust them all and I'd love to pick them all every week.
Yeah, well, you've kind of preempted, I suppose, the more football-orientated questions. Of the challenges that you've faced this season, one of them would be that fixture congestion backlog, because at one stage your chairman was talking about appealing to the Football League to maybe have the season extended. You had such a backlog to deal with, Liam.
Yeah, I've just seen Liverpool's fixtures and they're saying, you know, they're going to play every game handed to them, and it's 63 games, and you know, it's such a task, and we ended up playing 61 ourselves. And you know, you quickly try and bring, you know, the health and the well-being and the mental side to the players, because to try and prepare yourself to be at that elite performing level every 3 days for, you know, for 100 odd days, it's some task. So you know, it is a challenge. You know, it's also a challenge for supporters, you know, traveling up and down the country every Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday as well. So you know, you certainly look for the integrity of the competition. And like you say, you want to be the best version of yourself as well.
Yeah. And to that end, I wanted to pick out, and I know you'll want to talk about the collective, but Ben Amos and Jack Watmore playing every single game. I mean, I wonder whether we set enough stall by showing up and consistency like that in the modern era. It takes some doing, does it not?
Absolutely. You know, I've got to compliment the staff as well to make sure the lads are out there. Again, you know, with the congestion of fixtures, with the preparation, the regeneration of the players, because we had another number of lads who were probably available for every game and they probably missed only one or two, like Tom Naylor, you know, Max Power, Tendai Dariko. We had a lot of consistencies within our team. And it, you know, it's really credit to the staff, credit to the players, because like I always say, that their pressure really is to make sure they're ready mentally, physically, and it's certainly my pressure and the staff's pressure to make sure we're equipped and you know, we're tactically right and you know, we're fit. They've got certain things that they have to take care of, and collectively, you know, if we do that, you know, we should perform and hit them consistent levels, which I thought over the season, you know, sometimes we were, you know, a really good football inside. Sometimes we could run. Sometimes if we had to stand and fight, we could. But I thought our biggest thing, our consistency, were really good this year.
Yeah. A rival League One manager described you as being like a metronome last week to me. He said you will always get a 7.5 to 8 out of a Wigan. You're just so mechanical. Does that make you proud?
Yeah. I think any compliment, whether it's a nice one, a backhanded one, a tactical one, I think they're always nice to receive, because like you say, in this game, it's very rare people want to compliment you. And, you know, I think the lads deserve all the plaudits, the staff included, because, you know, to start a season with only 3 players and no staff, with just myself, you know, kind of at the forefront, to then, you know, adding assistant managers, goalkeeping coach, sports science departments, physio departments, recruitment, you know, a full squad, all put together in a short space of time, to come through pre-season, which obviously was a challenge in itself. And then, you know, pick up such a challenging division with such teams in it. As you can see, within the playoffs, it's a fantastic fixture list, you know, for the playoffs. And some of the teams that have missed out are, you know, such quality and, you know, well-coached teams. It's a real credit, really, again, to the hard work and the commitment shown by everybody who's coming to the building.
Yeah, and there was one incident as well, which is not in the manager's handbook, which was obviously Charlie Wyke's situation, where you obviously had to step in, and thankfully he's still with us. I mean, again, the emotional turmoil that could introduce into the squad dynamics and making sure everybody's over it, let alone Charlie's fit and well, was just another one of those challenges along the way, Liam.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'd never ever say it's one of my proudest moments, but it's certainly one of my happiest moments, so to speak. Obviously, to be able to live through it and come out the other way. To answer one of your quick fire questions, which could be added, you know, I think one of my happiest moments after the final whistle was probably hugging Charlie, having a picture with him, and then him whispering into my ear to saying that I'd be ready for next season, which is, you know, it's really a credit to him with the person that he is. One of the bravest, most great people that I've ever come across, and he'll do everything possible to being around the lads to make sure he's ready for next year. There's no doubt about that. But to see him in such healthy condition and again supporting the lads was fantastic.
Yeah. Have you almost had to hold him back a wee bit? I gather he was ready to start kicking the ball again, personally, at least emotionally, yeah, within about 24 hours of the incident, wasn't he? So have you really had to temper him and you know, restrict him a wee bit and make sure that sensible medical process took a hold?
Yeah. I think the club doctor, Jonathan Tobin, I think he's earned his money this year with Charlie. He's either giving him an headache or causing him other problems anyway. So he's having to educate and hold him back and avoid him and obviously stay out of his jokes and his banter anyway. So I'm sure he'll keep him on his toes for the summer, but vice versa. But they've got a great relationship and they'll both do everything that it takes to make sure first and foremost Charlie's as healthy as he can be. And he'll just keep ticking them boxes and reaching the milestones that he has to reach to be that, you know, Charlie White number nine, top footballer, top person that he is.
Liam, I just wondered whether the depths of despair from the low point, the administration, the uncertainty, was anyway compensated by the highs of getting over the line. We as human beings experience so many different emotions, but you have really gone from 1 to 100 on that scale of emotions, have you not, in 2 years?
Yes. And again, you know, with every individual who was, you know, around at the time, you know, last year, they deserve just as much credit. And then every individual who's been on this journey, you know, this year to you know, it won't bring sanity to what happened, you know, it won't erase the memory of it, but it'll come some way to bringing some sort of closure to a chapter, I'm sure. And like I say, there's been, you know, very good people before my time at the football club, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, excellent people after my time at the football club. I'm just fortunate enough that I've had the opportunity, and at the minute I'm the custodian leading the way, and I've been able to, you know, to kind of make the right decisions and get that little bit of luck that's needed.
Are you surprised yourself?
Not really, with the staff and the players and the hard work and the commitment. I think if you believe in what you do and your philosophy and your structure, you know, most clubs that I've been fortunate to have a really good group and managed to win something or be successful. And, you know, if, first and foremost, if you try and build a happy, healthy, hard-working environment where people want to come to work and learn and educate, you know, you'll have half a chance. And if you can get talented people running around for a start, you know, again, you'll earn your little bit of luck. And our lads have certainly, you know, worked hard, committed themselves, committed to each other, and not really ever left a breath out there.
Liam, I'm just looking at Sky Bet League 2, which concludes this weekend. Exeter now lead the way for the first time this season from Forest Green Rovers. They're a point clear. And then there's a whole cluster of 5 clubs separated by just 3 points. I'll just run through the fixtures for everybody listening this weekend. Northampton, who are currently in third, go to Barrow. Bristol Rovers, average points per game ratio in 2022, is right up there with Liverpool, Man City and Nottingham Forest. They're at home to Scunthorpe. Mansfield Town, who are in fifth, they entertain Forest Green Rovers, who are second. Port Vale, who are sixth, they go to Exeter. So you've got kind of still chasing automatic promotion via those chasing down the title. Swindon in seventh are at Walsall. And then you've got 2 teams who are trying to get into the playoffs. Sutton United, who are 8th, going to Harrogate Town. And Tranmere Rovers, who are 9th, going to Leighton Orient. How do you live with that uncertainty in the last week? And you had a little bit of a wobble towards the end, as did Rotherham. The ifs, buts, maybes, expectations. Can you? You're so close to it, but you can't get your hands around it. How do you live with all that in that final week, Liam?
You try and bring normality, try and bring consistency, try to, you know, avoid everybody so you're not as tetchy and as grouchy with everybody. Like Christmas Day, get to bed early so the day comes quicker. Prepare as well as you can. For me, I think every match day, you know, you've got to reflect on the week and ask yourself, honestly, if you could have done any more, could you have prepared the lads any more, could you give them more information? You know, could you have done any more, you know, collectively, individually? And if the answer is no, you've got to sit back and try and then, you know, leave the responsibility to the players and make the, you know, collective decisions within game and be as positive as you can. It's tough fixtures for myself because obviously David Sharp and Nigel at Mansfield, obviously David being the chairman here over the last few years, obviously Joey, I know Joey very well at Bristol. So that's a tough fixture also. And obviously Daryl at Port Vale, there's no easy games, neither is there. You know, you're going away to Barrow, you're playing Forest Green, you know, Scunthorpe with Keith coming up there. You know, such a fixture list to, you know, for a neutral. Yeah. I remember commenting last week on, you know, certainly for the neutral, you know, League One's got such a climax, both ends of the division. And then League Two this week, the Championship next week, the Premier League coming to a close, obviously with Liverpool trying to do, you know, the unthinkable. You know, for sport, you know, what we've missed over the last 18 months, you know, it's certainly coming back in abundance, isn't it?
Wonderfully said. What does the future look like then? What's your own summer look like? And then what do you need to do to try and be competitive in the Sky Bet Championship going forward, Liam?
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to try and encourage the staff to have a break. I think I've got the same holiday but I've booked for 3 years that we've never been on, so I'm going to try and try and get that with the kids, because we certainly don't see enough of them in the last 2 years. But for a football club like ours, you know, we set out from last year, like I said, with three players to build a foundation and then try and make them small steps. You know, it wasn't just on the football pitch; it was around the stadium, around the training ground with groundsmen and, you know, certainly chefs and sports etc. You know, with the squad, and it's important now from that foundation that we try and slowly keep building. You know, we wanted to be, you know, from myself, the you know, the vision is to be the best in League One in all departments and challenge all departments to be that. Now we've gone up a level and we'll start, you know, certainly, you know, on a starting line where we'll be. And now we want to try and pitch ourselves and you know, make them small steps and be progressive. You know, nobody's ever going to sprint before we can walk. And I think, all due respect, it's always down to the owner, the chairman, the chief exec to pitch where they want their football club in the football pyramid. You know, if they want their football club, you know, in the echelons of whichever division, well, then, you know, I'm sure we'll act accordingly. If they want to, you know, consolidate, etc., you know, these are all conversations that we'll have over the coming weeks. And you know, if by history's or by the brief history that we've just experienced this year, you know, we'll consolidate and we'll make them decisions collectively.
Are you knackered?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mentioned it. No, I saw Warnie on the final whistle at Gillingham when they got over the line. I mean, he dropped onto his haunches. He was on his hands and knees, almost facing yeah. the earth. I mean, it's bewildering fatigue, isn't it? The relentless nature of football, the way it sucks you in and gives you no breathing space at all to relax for what, no. 46 weeks or whatever it is?
Yeah, that's right. And it comes with the territory, you know, with the demands of the game, with the demands of the individuals now, the players, you know, they're all well coached, they're all well managed. You know, the one educating, you know, certainly through the week. And, you know, with certainly football and media and social media, it's 24 hours a day. And you know, the press, etc. It's fantastic. You know, you've got to make sure you've got the energy levels and you've got to keep, you know, certainly progressing forward yourself as an individual as well. Yeah, I certainly feel what you've described with Paul Warne, certainly the two and a half years that we've had was kind of seemed to have rolled into one, really. Again, you know, complimentary to everybody who's at the football club, complimentary to Rotherham Football Club, and you wish everybody well in the playoffs in League One, obviously League Two and the Championship also.
And final question, how do you think you've personally developed over the past 2 years' worth of experience? How has it changed you and prepared you for your own future?
Well, it's obviously, there's been a lot to digest, hasn't there? I think I think Matt spoke to yourself previously where somebody told me that it'd be a really good experience being in administration and coming through it. And I'm still not sure whether that's correct.
No, I'm not either.
You certainly learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about the certain individuals as well, whether that's footballers or staff or situation. You know, the difference was it was managing a situation, not really a football club, because football clubs are difficult to manage anyway. But then into this year, you know, a different expectation, a different criteria. And like you say, I've been fortunate to work at some really good football clubs with some really good people. So the experience over the last 12, 14 years that I've gained, I think I've probably doubled that over the last 2 years. So, you know, very progressive, loved every minute of it and looking forward to the challenges ahead.
Good. But first, just give yourself 15 minutes to sit on your sofa and stare into space, will you? It's a magnificent achievement, and you and everybody at Wigan Athletic have our congratulations. Thanks, Liam.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And thanks for your time as well.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Bournemouth's two-year absence from the Premier League ended this week after their almost winner-takes-all victory over Nottingham Forest. It's congratulations to Scott Parker's team and to Fulham, whose 7-0 thumping of Luton Town secured the Sky Bet Championship title 24 hours earlier. That game saw Alexander Mitrovic take his league goal tally for the season to 43, breaking the 29-year-old record for the division set by Portsmouth's Guy Whittingham back in 1992-93. And I look at this guy and I can scarcely believe it. And with no disrespect to you and suggesting you're a very old man, but it does feel like there's something that could not happen in the modern era. 43 goals in 2021-22. It's astonishing, isn't it?
I think it's incredible, yeah. It's a incredible achievement for him and then the team as well to be able to help him get to that total is incredible, because the modern game has so much more physical demands, I think, on players. The amount of games, the closeness of the games, the physicality of the games, not just running, but the way how athletic players have to be now. I think it's incredible a feat.
You can be totally honest with us. Is this bittersweet for you? You've said a lot of very nice things media-wise over the last couple of months as it's been looming. But is a little bit of you knocked that he's taken you out of the history books?
Look, I think when I was in that season, it wasn't talked about much. And I've had more media attention over the last 2 years with Ivan Toney last season than I've ever had. So I am really pleased from that point of view, because obviously it's nice to be talked about. But yeah, I suppose, you know, you're disappointed your record was gone. And I keep saying the biggest disappointment of that year was the fact that those goals didn't get Portsmouth promotion, whereas, you know, it has done for, you know, Mitrovic and Fulham this season.
Yeah. I think what the most astonishing thing about your team that year not reaching the Premier League was you didn't get promoted on goals scored, which to say there's some sort of irony in that after the subject matter of our chat now is quite unbelievable. I mean, the other thing about that was you were only 4 years out of the army then, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was. Yeah, what a journey. I was 28 years old. I was in the army until I was 24. Sport was my thing, whether it was football, rugby, cricket, basketball, athletics. The army gave me the option to do any of those. It ended up being football. And again, you know, they were gracious in the way they wanted anybody in the army that was decent at sport. They wanted to help them as much as they could. So they were, you know, generous in the way they allowed me to go to Portsmouth. And as you said, 4 years later, you know, being able to score those amount of goals. And I don't regret entering football that way, because I think it helped me along the way become the player who I was. And the season before 92-93, I'd been injured a couple of times. And I think what my PTI experience in the army allowed me to do, think about and reflect upon, was I wasn't fit enough. So I did something about it that pre-season. I did 2 weeks pre-season, if you like. And that helped with injuries and staying fit and the agility to bump a few bruises, you know, and ride a few tackles.
I love a good life story, but to go from what? How long were you in the army for? Was that from 18 to 24?
Yeah, I joined at just over 17 and a half. Yeah, yeah, straight into the adult army.
Wow. So we've gone from the army to going into the history books, playing professional football, to moving on from Portsmouth to Villa and the loan spells with Wolves and Sheffield Wednesday, and then back to Portsmouth, Watford. Was it Peterborough you went to briefly? Oxford United?
Yeah.
I mean, so you've had that career. Then you had your caretakership of Portsmouth as well. And now you're one of the FA's lead coach educators and you run the pro license. I mean, that is some professional life.
Yeah, I know.
Do you realise
that? And I really don't take it for granted. You know, I think to be able to do something that's your passion and you love doing as a job is just absolutely incredible. You know, to be in football where you haven't got to worry about results. You haven't got to be able to worry. You haven't got to worry about, you know, what the next week brings. You can, you know, plan your own diary in the job that I do to a big extent is incredible. And as I said, I'm loving it. And it brings me into contact with lots of great people, Clem.
Anybody in particular you had in mind when you...
Including yourself, of course.
Thank you very much indeed. I thought I'd just let you finish your sentence there. I have to ask you, Glenn Murray sets a record for the modern era, if you like, 2012-13 with Crystal Palace scores 30. Then suddenly, last season, Ivan Toney breaks that with 31. Then Alexander Mitrovic does it this season about a month ago and then goes on to smash your record. And I suppose, actually, thinking about it, we should throw Dominic Solanke's name into the mix with the 29 he's got for Bournemouth this season too. Why the sudden spurt of goal scoring?
Yeah, I think there's a breed of coaches and managers now that want to play more creative football, playing out from the back through the thirds. The development of more creative players, I think, has come to the fore in the last 3 or 4 years, certainly. So I think you're getting more chances created and therefore you're going to get more goals.
On the other hand, I sort of look at a lot of people will look at the Alexander Mitrovic situation and say, well, wait a second. 2 years ago, he scores 26 league goals. Then he goes up to the Premier League and only gets 3. Then he comes back down again and gets 43. Can we entirely pin that on his ability, speed of thought, ability to get past better defenders, etc.? Or does some of that come down to the way in which Fulham line up when they get into the bigger division and have to be a bit less offensive?
Possibly, but also I think we all know the huge step between Championship and Premier League players, where you come into a world where majority of the world's best are playing in the Premier League, and that includes defenders that are going to be sharper, stronger, quicker, and mentally as ready as Mitrovic is in stiffing out chances. So I think there's a combination there of the ability of the players and Fulham. It'll be interesting to see under Silva how he develops that team play, I suppose, stepping up, you know, because we've seen Brentford go up and still play the same way they want to play and do pretty well at it. It'll be interesting to see how, with his experiences before of Everton, how he's going to approach his and set his team up.
And putting your coach educator's hat on the fact that you had Scott Parker, the Bournemouth manager, on one of your pro license intakes a few years ago. I mean, just what a great signal that sends to the rest of English coaches, does it not? That there's a guy who's won promotion to the Premier League twice in 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's what we want to do as the FA is get our, you know, coaches and English qualified coaches to the top of the game. So seeing Scott do that, you know, Nathan Jones, Steve Cooper, you know, they've all come through our, you know, courses, and, you know, in many ways, because of the influx of foreign owners, then they've got a choice of all over the world for who they want to bring in. So, you know, it might be a way that our coaches get to the top of the game is bringing them up through the Championship. But, you know, there's some good young British English coaches, in the game that are doing very well and need the opportunity. So, yeah, Scotty going up. Hopefully, you know, Nathan or Steve Cooper will go up. you know, and carry on the influx of those English coaches into the Premier League.
Yeah, I obviously respect Guy Whittingham's opinion on that, but as a Middlesbrough fan, I can't necessarily agree with the entire editorial of what he's just said. Table doesn't lie, does it? At the end of a long, hard season, one game still to go as we record this, and Fulham and Bournemouth, you know, for all the blips towards the end for Bournemouth, and Fulham had the odd one. Best two teams for you?
Yeah, have to be. I think I can't see. You know, Forest, I mean, that is an unbelievable job that Steve Cooper's done and it's been, you know, talked about a lot. But yeah, there was a few people questioning who was manager of the season in that at that level with the job he's done. But for Fulham to play the way they've played, I think undoubtedly your top spot, and Bournemouth, you know, and deserve it because as what you just said there, it's over, you know, a certain amount of games. And if you're in the top two at the end of the season, you really deserve it because it's a relentless season in the Championship.
Really is. I have to take you back to yourself. Do you know where your memorabilia is from that record-breaking season of your own? Do you ever sit down in a sort of quiet moment or when you're not having a great day and sort of watch your own goal montages? But I mean, they're being black and white, obviously, or maybe which film wasn't even invented back then. But do you kind of tap into your own past, or does it feel like a different person?
Yeah, the more reminded about it that you are, then you do tap into it and you remember certain things. I've got, when we went into COVID and all the Zoom started, I was up in my little study and I've got two boots. I've got a silver boot that was given to me for scoring the 42 league goals. And I've got another boot from Portsmouth for scoring the 47 goals in that season. So your people always used to ask me about what are the boots for? So, but they're up in my study and I actually got them out of the way. I didn't have them, you know, in the picture frame. I took them out of the way. Because I thought it's probably, you know, gone past now. But it's like I said, I've never had so much attention from the media, you know, even when I got the record back in 1992-93. But yeah, and certainly, you know, with it being the topic of conversation, you know, certainly within the family and friends, you know, it's nice to be reminded of when things were going well.
We should finish by paying tribute to the man himself, the man that's nicked your record, Aleksandar Mitrovic. I mean, just an astonishing machine-like striker guy, is he not? It's just been a season that none of us will ever forget for him.
Yeah, I think the way he's played, not just his goal scoring, but the assists and the way, you know, I watched the game the other night and he was involved, you know, his movement. You know, his movement, not just for himself, but for others as well. There was often he would take himself away from somewhere that he knew was going to be a danger area where another player could go. And that reminded me of what Paul Walsh used to do for me in that side that year. But his all-round player, I think, has been, you know, fantastic this year. And it's a great achievement for him, absolutely. I actually sent some personal congratulations to him via Lewis Boamorte. To say well done to him because Lewis was on the course a couple of years ago, so I thought it'd be nice to do that, and hopefully that was passed on.
Guy, he might have taken your place in the record books, but we'll never ever forget your contribution either. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Clem.
Better just remind you where we are with the playoff position in the Sky Bet Championship. Forest currently third, followed by Huddersfield, Sheffield United and Luton. Middlesbrough and Millwall lie just outside, but still with a chance of getting in the mixture fixtures final round in the division for this season. Millwall travel to Bournemouth, Huddersfield at home to Bristol City, Forest at Hull City, Luton at home to Reading, Middlesbrough travel to Preston, and Sheffield United entertain Fulham. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Guy Whittingham, to Liam Richardson. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clements. If your team is in the thick of it this weekend, then good luck. And join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.